All right. Well, we're a few minutes over, so we should. I'll call the subcommittee of healthcare licensing to order. We do have a quorum. The quorum is present, and so Representative Albright will move the approval of the minutes for February 9th. Any additions, corrections, or changes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Hearing none, if those are in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Representative Albright, we're going to start with your bill. Representative Albright moves House File 2455. We have the bill before us. Representative Albright, I have an author's amendment titled A16-0811. Representative Albright moves his author's amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Albright, to your amendment briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would be remiss if, based upon the blush on the rose, if you will, for this committee, that I would not offer up to the chair my recompense for being on the committee. So with we have a House chair, one, but I brought treats.
You, sir, are a gentleman and a scholar, and I thank you for that. Unfortunately, he didn't bring enough for the rest of the committee.
Right.
Thank you very much, Representative Albright, to your author's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the A16-0811 amendment basically rectifies some of the language in the bill itself that was not foreseen in the original drafting of the legislation. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask that the amendment be moved in order for the bill to be put in the manner in which the author would appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Clearly your plan was to get me to take a giant bite of this treat and then turn it back over to me. So thank you very much for that.
You're welcome, Mr. Chair.
So wait, that caramel on there.
We'll
too.
Wait, Mr. Chair, until you're done digesting.
All right. Representative Albright moves his author's amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Albright, to your bill.
As amended, Mr. Chair.
As amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2445, members, seeks to remedy, or might I say, recognize the need and the growing input for osteopathic medicine in our state, and the need for representation by this area within the medical community on the Board of Medical Practice. I have with me today Ruth Martinez, who is able, much more than I am, to expand on my comments and to answer any questions that the members might have with regard to this technical amendment to the Board of Medical Practice. So thank you, members. And Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, I'd appreciate it if you would allow Ms. Martinez to make some remarks on behalf of the bill.
Ms. Martinez.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Thanks to Representative Albright for bringing this bill forward. These modifications to the Medical Practice Act are really necessary to update language relating to osteopathic physicians and osteopathic medical practice. The Board of Medical Practice has licensed and regulated osteopathic physicians equivalently to allopathic physicians for many, 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 many years. Changes here really reflect accurate terminology, representation of the osteopathic medical practice, and how the physicians specifically are referenced. So updates are throughout the Practice Act. We also wanted to align examination requirements. Osteopathic physicians take the COMLEX USA exam, and allopathic and international graduates take the USMLE examination. I won't get into the abbreviations, but this aligns the numbers of attempts of that exam. Each has three components. Each applicant has three attempts at each of those three components, and this now brings those into alignment. Previously, it was six attempts on the COMLEX, nine attempts total on the USMLE. So this is just really making it much more equivalent in the licensing and examination processes. It also allows more than one osteopathic physician to be appointed to the board. Previous language has limited osteopathic physicians on the board membership to one. So this will enlarge the pool for osteopathic physicians. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for our testifier? Anyone in the audience wishing to testify to this bill? Representative Albright, closing comments on your bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate a favorable determination on this bill. I understand it might be held over for possible inclusion in a larger licensure bill. So with that, members, I conclude my remarks and look for your favorable treatment.
Thank you, Mr. Albright. With that, House File 2366 is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Representative Peterson, we have House File 2322 up next. Is that, did you say that you brought treats as well?
Mr. Chair, yes, I just would like to know if you'd like your treats now or later.
We're ready now.
Okay. If I will go ahead and pass them around.
This is my new favorite thing about being a chair. Everyone brings their treats.
Is that okay, downstairs?
Oh, Representative Peterson, I will move House File 2322. We have the bill before us. I don't see any amendments before us. And so to the bill, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Chair Zerwas. And I just want to add that I didn't completely bribe my husband when I took the cookies that he made for our daughter, but because I'm just a very good negotiator. So, but however, he can make more for our daughter that's coming later. And I wanted to also add that the chocolates are from the beautiful community of Burnsville. So I just wanted to, so they're both actually from my district one way or the other. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to the bill that you have before you, this is lactation consultants licensure. And the purpose of this bill is that we all know the importance of breastfeeding, and there's a very small window of opportunity when a child is first born that a mother will be successful, and having good quality services provided is important. The other challenge that we have is that unless a lactation consultant is licensed, they cannot get compensated for services from medical assistants. So the purpose of this bill is to facilitate that those services that are being provided and obviously highlighting the importance of them. However, this licensure is also optional. So it is there to facilitate services that we have in our hospitals and to obviously provide a benefit. And I do have two testifiers today to discuss the bill in greater detail. We have Joanne Wesley and Stephanie Rodriguez-Moser, and they can introduce themselves and go carry on from there.
Great. All right. State your name, your affiliation, and please begin.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Joanne Wesley, and I'm an international board-certified lactation consultant, and or for short, you would call me an IBCLC. So thank you today for hearing our bill, because we're pretty excited about what this could represent for us. A little bit of background. Our nation's health care costs are rising from acute illness and care for chronic diseases such as those related to obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and breastfeeding is increasing in its prominence in public health as a priority because it impacts primary prevention, which is critical. Successful breastfeeding is significantly influenced by a good start at birth, which also depends on the hospital's organization, quality of care for newborn infants, and lactation support received by new mothers. So the reason we are asking for licensure is, first, we are not here to discuss all the benefits of breastfeeding. They definitely play into our argument as laid out for licensure in House File 2322. But we also know that breastfeeding provides both short and long-term health benefits to mother and child, and this is indisputable. According to the Minnesota Department of Health website, nearly all U.S. infants are born in the hospital, and while their stay may be short, hospital maternity care practices affect breastfeeding initiation, duration, and exclusivity, and can have a lasting impact on the child's health. Active support and promotion of breastfeeding is essential to improving the health of Minnesota children. Second, we know that mothers that give birth in a hospital with an IBCLC on staff have higher breastfeeding rates. A recent study published in the American Journal of Public Health found that patients connected with an IBCLC were three times more likely to exclusively breastfeed at 3 months. Additionally, women on Medicaid, those that delivered at a hospital that employed an IBCLC, were four times more likely to be breastfeeding at discharge. Once home from the hospital, women who have access to clinic or private practice IBCLCs have even higher rates of breastfeeding duration and exclusivity. And it's important for us to understand that most often when a lactation consultant is called upon, it is to assist with a mother or infant that is experiencing some sort of health issue, breastfeeding difficulty or concern, or the infant has been born under duress. For example, trained clinical lactation services are needed for infants who are born prematurely, infants who are struggling to gain weight, a mother who has low or perceived low milk supply, or an infant requiring intensive care. Mothers need qualified help not only to begin, but to maintain lactation. To put this into perspective, according to MDH, Minnesota Department of Health, about 5,000 babies are born in our state each year prematurely. Premature birth is a leading cause of death in the first month of life and contributes to one in three infant deaths. Babies who survive an early birth face the risk of lifelong health problems such as intellectual disabilities, breathing, respiratory problems, feeding and digestive issues. Breast milk is medicine for fragile babies, and research shows how important it is for an infant to receive its mother's milk. Breastfeeding or being fed breast milk can impact and reduce or eliminate health concerns. While nurses and doctors are pivotal in the first line of response to help a mother and infant, they don't often have the 30 to 60 minutes to assist a mother who is trying to provide needed nourishment for her infant and fully address her breastfeeding concerns. And finally, licensure will provide clarity in the market for the patient seeking knowledge about who can provide this kind of service for them and who's qualified. Our bill is unique. We have tirelessly worked to make sure that this bill is inclusive rather than exclusive. We recognize the support systems needed to be large and that lactation care among multiple professions and disciplines and specialties is required to ensure optimal breastfeeding management and support both in the hospital and in our communities. Because of this, we've gone to great lengths to make sure that we are not fencing anyone out of the market. This bill applies only to those individuals to provide clinical lactation services and have met the standards required by IBCLC certification. Those individuals who are currently licensed healthcare professions or in other licensed healthcare professions or those who want to provide breastfeeding education or support can continue to do so without licensure. This bill was brought forth to you by the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition, whose membership is comprised of more than 30 local breastfeeding coalitions from across the state that support mothers in breastfeeding. Both the local and state coalitions are comprised of members from the WIC program, hospital lactation providers, La Leche League leaders, lactation consultants, IBCLCs, physicians, and local and state health department staff. It would be counterintuitive for us to prevent our own members from our own association from assisting women and infants in their quest for breastfeeding, meeting their breastfeeding goals. So I'd like to turn this over to Stephanie, and then I will have a brief closing remark.
Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you so much, Chair. My name again is Stephanie Rodriguez Moser. I'm here to speak on behalf of the Minnesota Breastfeeding Coalition and to testify in support of House File 2322. Women who choose to breastfeed do face numerous barriers. In our state, while 90% of mothers try to breastfeed, at about 3 months, only 48% of mothers are still exclusively breastfeeding. At 6 months, that number drops further to only 23%. Even though breastfeeding is natural, it can also be very challenging. Studies have found that the difference between a mother's prenatal breastfeeding expectations and the realities of her early experiences are why many mothers stop breastfeeding within the first 2 weeks postpartum. Oftentimes, skills such as how to hold and position your baby at the breast, how to achieve an effective latch, and other breastfeeding techniques take time to learn and regularly do need to be taught to both the mother and the newborn. Women also do need the support of family members, community, clinicians, and employers to achieve their own set breastfeeding goals. This is where I come in. As an IBCLC, I assist mothers with breastfeeding. The extent of that assistance does vary, but in a normal day, I may teach a mother how to hand express her milk, help her to latch and position her baby, assess a mother's breasts for trauma, or I may do a full feeding assessment in which the anatomy of the baby's oral structures, the mother's breasts, and the effectiveness of a feed are all evaluated. I also work with mothers that are returning to work, or infants that are having a difficult time feeding from bottles while their mothers are separated from them. In 2011, I actually moved from Missouri to Minnesota to take a position as an IBCLC at a health system here in the state. The health system I work for is in Todd County. That's the fifth most impoverished county in the state at this time. Most of the mothers I see are low income and are very, very vulnerable to health disparities. In greater Minnesota, access to health care in itself can be challenging, and breastfeeding care can be even worse than that. Within the surrounding five-county area, I'm the only IBCLC. Not only am I the only IBCLC, but there aren't any other support groups like La Leche League or WIC Peer Counselors outside of our hospital. Due to this, I'm quite busy. I do see roughly 500 to 600 individual mothers per year, and many of these patients do see me more than once, just kind of depending on the problems that they're having. I've been fortunate that although transportation is often an issue for many of my patients, my hospital does have a number of satellite clinics that allow me to shorten that distance for them. This month alone, I've driven about 250 miles to those different satellite clinics just to be able to assist these mothers with their breastfeeding issues. I also run a 24-hour warm line in which patients can reach me during evening or weekend hours or when I'm at something like this. This ensures that there's qualified support and information available at all times, so if families are struggling, they do have that available. It's not uncommon for me to take calls overnight, while on vacations, or during holidays. In this year alone, I've worked with infants that have had failure to thrive diagnoses, teen mothers, mothers with mental health issues, preterm infants, and multiples. The providers that I work with enjoy the fact that I can take a little more time than they can oftentimes to assist these mothers with their issues, as they often have jam-packed schedules that may not allow them to see these breastfeeding dyads for enough time to effectively assess and treat the situation. Even though there's a great need for lactation services in our area, for the past 2 years, due to a lack of reimbursement, my hospital has been unable to fund me as a full-time employee. Fortunately, we've been able to obtain grants to fill in that budget gap. But as you know, grant funding is very uncertain. This bill would allow us to provide an avenue for allowing myself and others like me to increase the number of mothers and babies that we serve, in particular, mothers and infants that are low income or on Medicaid. At the same time, this bill does not prohibit those that are currently working in hospital or clinic settings, such as nurses or specialists, from continuing the work that they do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez-Moser. Ms. Wesley.
All right. Thank you, Chairman. In closing, it's critical to continue breastfeeding initiation, duration, and exclusivity rates to improve the preventative impact on the health of Minnesota mothers and babies. To do this, we need to expand access to qualified lactation providers across our state. While access to lactation consultants in the metro area is improving, still needs more. This bill would help us close that gap in the disparity that Stephanie discussed in greater Minnesota. And while it's very hard to access clinical lactation support, licensure of lactation consultants would not prevent those qualified members of other currently licensed professions, occupations, or the volunteers like WIC peer counselors and legislative leaders from providing breastfeeding support that is consistent within the accepted standards of their role. Licensure of lactation consultants would do this: provide consumers, healthcare providers, insurers, and employers with the ability to identify a level of support they deem adequate for their needs, whether that be a qualified clinical lactation consultant, such as an IBCLC, or an individual providing breastfeeding education and support services. It would also provide a means of standardized practices and maintain a sound oversight of lactation professionals. It would allow for a reimbursement within a healthcare system that will enable access to timely, skilled, and competent lactation services for all mothers and babies. And finally, it will positively impact the growth of this profession by facilitating employment of adequate numbers of IBCLC lactation consultants needed to meet both the current and the increasing demand in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from members for our testifiers? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know things have changed a lot. I have three children. They all had jaundice pretty bad, so I spent a week in the hospital, each one of them. So I had definitely really good care while I was there, and nurses were able to help me. And I know in today's world, people go home virtually the next day. So my question is, typically the nurses are the ones that help you when you're in the hospital. So how much follow-up is from that, and at what point do you actually come into being? And I know you said you talked with some of the people over a length of time.
So thank you very much for the question, and thank you, Chair and committee members. I do see people, because I work for a rather small health system, I do see people in the hospital. Our nurses really love that because staffing ratios have increased a little bit. So they don't always, between charting and seeing their patients and things like that, they don't always have the time to spend, you know, 60 minutes with a mom who needs help right then and there to get their, you know, screaming, upset baby latched on. I also follow up with people in the clinic, and I do follow up phone calls as well. We're fortunate enough to have some nurses that do some home visits, so I do get tagged in a lot on those if a baby is, you know, has dropped weight further or something like that. Does that answer what you were wanting to know?
Representative Mason.
I think it did. I just wanted to know if, or to clarify, whether you came in after the hospital or you are actually taking your services or start in the hospital in addition to those that would be provided by the nurses.
I can answer that.
Ms. Wesley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have worked in both a rural setting in a hospital doing inpatient and outpatient lactation, and then most recently I was employed by Hennepin County Medical Center. I started their lactation program there. And to answer that question about jaundice is very interesting. Because of the short stays that we see with babies, oftentimes jaundice isn't identified as a problem until later. And so oftentimes a patient would call and the baby wasn't feeding well and that baby was severely jaundiced and would come into our lactation clinic and we were the first line of defense to that baby. We would, of course, immediately call a pediatrician and get them involved and get lab work and have the baby assessed. We were seeing that, and our pediatricians at Hennepin County really appreciated the fact that we did a very quick follow-up on a patient that had potential issues for maybe jaundice or some other issue that might have been going on. So you can use an IBCLC in the hospital, and they work with nursing staff very well, and then you also have outpatient services that lactation consultants can provide, so they give very quick follow-up. And especially because some pediatric offices can't always offer that 2 to 3 day well child check that's really necessary. So our pediatricians oftentimes will say, we are so booked. And we'd say, well, let us pull them in. If we have a problem, we will let you know. And we always sent all of our notes to pediatricians and we're, you know, really communicating with them.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Anyone else in the audience that wish to testify on this bill? Seeing no one, Representative Peterson, I will turn it back to you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that this will be laid over for future consideration. I think you heard some great testimony, and I think appreciate your support on this bill moving forward.
Thank you, Representative Pearson. With that, House File 2322 will be laid over. Members, just a little bit of heads up about what the rest of this committee will look like. My plan is the first week of session, depending on schedules, to get back together. I'm going to meet with Representative Fisher, and then I'm going to meet with our Republican caucus, and if there are bills that people feel comfortable with moving forward, we will bring those bills back on that first meeting, not with the intention of taking additional testimony, but on those bills, taking action on those bills. We've been in discussion with the Senate, and although nothing's been finalized as of yet, because of some of their deadlines, they've requested that we do not send bills over as an omnibus bill altogether. I will work with Chair Mack and continue our discussions with the Senate. We haven't decided how we're going to handle that yet, but we've taken their comments into consideration. So I don't have a next meeting date to announce today, but in the coming weeks, we will have information about when our next meeting will be, and that, once again, will be a meeting that you'll see the agenda to see what bills we plan on moving forward after I visit with Representative Fisher and my Republican caucus, and then from there, we will just come together to move the bills along and take votes and not take testimony at that time. Any questions from members? All right. With that, we're adjourned.